Well, just before we have our final reading and final carol, I just want to leave you with a few thoughts. And I wonder what your reaction is to this time of year. Now, for some people, it is a time of real busyness and preparation, so much so that perhaps you are dreading it. Now, you are looking at someone who has never yet learned to cook a Christmas dinner. And I would say, I'm unlikely to learn. What I am quite good at doing is eating dinners cooked by other people. So I'm the kind of person who turns up and eats and, you know, volunteers to wash up, perhaps after I've seen you've completed it and all that kind of thing. But for many people, Christmas really is a time of cooking for 1 million people, washing up for 2 million people. And by the time you put your feet up, there's even more to do. For other people, I think it's really a time of boredom. Because you've seen it, you've done it before, you've gone through the motions time and time again. Another round, another expense of having to buy all those presents for people who quite possibly will never really use them or appreciate them. Or maybe it's a time of sadness, a time of particular memories which you know will be resurrected, brought back when you hear the songs and you see the tree and all the rest of it. Because for many people, the 25th of December is not a time for happy families, it's a time of difficulty. Now, what I'd like to do very briefly this evening is look at five reactions at that very first Christmas time from some of the characters about whom we have heard this evening. And I'll spend a few minutes on each one. And the first reaction, of course, is that of King Herod and all Jerusalem with him. We're told in Matthew, and there are two accounts from which we typically read, Matthew and Luke. We'll be hearing from John when I've finished. But in Matthew chapter 3, verse 3, when Herod the king heard this, he was troubled and all Jerusalem with him. Now, why be troubled? When the angels came, they said they bring tidings of great joy. Yet Herod was troubled. For him, there was no great joy. There was no celebration. It was something to dread. Herod, unfortunately, suffered from paranoia. His last act on earth was to execute his own son for plotting against him. Almost certainly, Herod had made it up. It never happened. And the reason I think that is that if you are the son of a king who is about to die, there is no point plotting, because he is about to die, and you will get it anyway. But there you go. You see, Herod understood that if the Messiah were to be born on his watch, the Messiah, who was a king, would be a threat to him and to his throne. Of course, his kingdom was not of this world. But did you know there are 52 governments around the world today who ban or restrict reading the Bible? What we have done tonight would be illegal in 52 countries around the world. As far as I can see, that's 52 King Herods who are still here. However, his reaction changes from being troubled, and I note all of Jerusalem with him, to a verse later on, when the wise men, the magi, don't come back and tell him where he is. He considers himself to have been deceived by the wise men and was, quote, exceedingly angry. Herod is used to getting his own way. He's not used to being outsmarted by foreigners from the east. In fact, it wasn't the wise men who outsmarted Herod. It was God who warned them. You know, God will not be mocked. He cannot be outsmarted. And Herod was determined that this Christ child would not survive his reign. But God, the sovereign God of heaven, outsmarted him. And in fact, it was Herod who would not survive. It was Christ who did. So Herod and Jerusalem are, number one, troubled. Number two, they become exceedingly angry. We have another reaction here, this time from the shepherds. So Herod is the powerful king. The shepherds were, I know we have a kind of romanticized image about being a shepherd in the ancient Near East, but it probably was something of a tough life. You know, you do whatever will pay the bills, don't you? And I'm pretty sure that if they didn't need the money, they would not have been camping out on those cold hills in the dark. Nevertheless, it was to them that the angels appeared. And we read this time in Luke chapter 2 and verse 15. So it was when the angels had gone away from them into heaven that the shepherds said to one another, "Let us go to Bethlehem and see this thing which has come to pass, which the Lord has made known to us." Now, I try to imagine myself in the shepherd's shoe, sandal. And the old ones are always the best, aren't they? There you go. Now, had I lived to see these quite possibly thousands of angels appear on the hillside, you know, I might have thought, well, that was the highlight of my life. You know, I've seen a load of angels. I've heard singing from heaven. There aren't many people who can say that. You know, I have lived long enough to see it. Well, that's great. I can now, you know, retire in peace. In fact, they say, "Let us now go to Bethlehem and see this thing which has come to pass." Having beheld all that angelic and heavenly razzmatazz, it's to Bethlehem to which they repair to see whether the angels have been telling the truth. Now, I'm pretty sure they didn't doubt the angels. And of course, what they saw in Bethlehem, I'm not sure there were lots of candles being lit like this. I think we need to kind of remove ourselves from the Christmas card image, where every piece of straw has been nicely polished and rearranged, and the animals are very polite, and they haven't made any mess on the floor, because they were very good animals that night. Of course, it would have been a pretty filthy place to be. It would also have been pretty dark, and it would have stunk. I wouldn't have said it was a horrible smell, but it certainly wasn't the kind of environment in which you would want a newborn child to be delivered. And yet, I wonder if the shepherd's response here, unlike Herod, who is troubled and then angry, is one of curiosity. They could have taken the angel's word for it. They said, "Oh great, over in Bethlehem over there, someone's been born who is Christ the Lord. That's great news, right? Let's get on, you know, looking after the sheep." In fact, they go and they find out. They leave the fields to find out what is so amazing in Bethlehem that all that angelic splendor should have been made known to them. And I wonder here if there is a lesson for us on a typical Christmas, even in our own homes. There will be glitz and glamour and decoration and tinsel and all manner of things which twinkle and sparkle. But I would invite you this year to move beyond that and have in you what I'm going to call a holy curiosity. Find out what it's all about. Don't just enjoy the light show and the sound, but go, as it were, to the stable of Bethlehem. have that curiosity in you, which perhaps you had as a child, but now you've hardened your heart and you take things for granted. Come to Bethlehem. But don't stay at Bethlehem either. You see, Jesus did not live there for long, and he grew up and he lived a life. And, you know, in a few months' time, you won't like me for reminding you, but in a few months' time it will be Easter. And in this very chapel, the Friday before, we'll mark this child's death. And 3 days after, we'll mark his resurrection, for he conquered death and offers life to all who believe him. Be curious. Be curious enough to go to the stable, but be more curious still. Go to the cross. Go to the empty tomb. A fourth reaction is one of Mary herself. Now, in, you know, very Protestant churches like ours, we don't tend to overemphasize Mary very much, but she plays an important part here. And in Luke 2 verse 19, we read, "But Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart." Well, what things was she treasuring and pondering? Everything which has happened in this story. These shepherds appearing from nowhere. These mysterious magi from the east appearing and worshipping her child. That is not normal. But she kept them all and pondered them in her heart. I think most of us here tonight know the Christmas story off by heart. Year after year after year, we know about angels and shepherds and wise men and all the rest of it. Mary knew about it as well. In fact, she saw them. But it wasn't for her just a load of memories that she might recall from time to time. Luke, and I think Luke the writer, met Mary. There's much material in Luke's gospel which indicates the two got their heads together. And he recorded things which only she could have told him. And I think this is one of them. All these things which have happened, she pondered them in her heart. This evening, I don't just want you to know about shepherds and magi, because you already do. But I would invite you to ponder them. Think about them. Why did it happen? You know, 2,000 years ago, there were lots of Jewish babies being born, even in Bethlehem. There are many times when horrible Herod became troubled and angry. I imagine there were plenty of times when bored shepherds became curious about things which happened. When you're sitting on a hillside all night, what else is there to do but to ponder? But I would urge you, like Mary, to ponder the things you have heard tonight, just as she pondered them that first night. I don't think Mary fully understood what was going on. You see, God is not looking for theologians and philosophers. He's not looking for an expert or a know-it-all. He's looking for people who believe. To ponder something in the heart is to believe it. And I urge you this evening, has the time come to not just know, but to believe? Not just in the head, but in the heart. To believe the message that Christ Jesus came into the world to save people who have done things wrong. That's all of us. And the fifth reaction, and my final one, is arguably the saddest of them all. Now, I think it's pretty sad that Herod became troubled by something which brought peace on earth. I think it's sad that Herod became angry when in fact Christ had come, that wretches like Herod might be redeemed. No, the saddest reaction of all is not to have a reaction. Well, of whom do I speak? Well, Luke chapter 2 verse 17. Because there was no room for them in the inn. I remember once when I was in our Sunday school at Lancaster. Each year we'd divvy up the parts for the nativity play. And every year I wanted to be one of the kings. It's not because I have any particular hankering or lust for power, but their outfits were always better. If you were a king, you got to wear, you know, velvet and blues and reds and gold, and you got a nice hat. And of course, they weren't kings anyway, but our Sunday school teachers didn't know that. Unless you were a king, you got stuck with the old dressing gown and tea towel on the head routine. Well, I remember one year I got the innkeeper, and I really wanted the king. But anyway, I got the innkeeper, and I thought, well, I will give it my all, the tea towel, all the rest of it. And I remember that, of course, they were all little kids. We were all little kids, weren't they? But they kind of appeared, and they knocked on the door. And one of the farmers in the church had managed to build a doorway out of wood, and it was great. And you were able to slam the door. And my job was to say, there's no room, and slam the door. I must say, I put my heart into it, you know. It was only a supportive role, but it probably would have got the nomination for the Oscar had there been such for Sunday school nativity plays. I enjoyed that role in the end. But you know, actually, there really was an innkeeper who said no. We don't know his name. Or her name. And you know what? He didn't actually do anything wrong. If you're full, you're full. If you've got 10 rooms and you've let out all 10, you can't quickly build an 11th. I also propose that he didn't look at Mary and Joseph and say, we don't want riffraff like you round here, thank you very much. This is a respectable neighbourhood. There was nothing wrong with them. I don't think he beheld Mary's pregnant state and thought, I don't want any of that mess, you know. I honestly think he was simply busy taking care of the other people. He was not a bad man. In fact, he was doing a pretty good job running the inn. I imagine he was held in high regard in the district. A respectable and well-known local hotelier. You know, you want a good room, you go to him. And of course, it might be that it was in fact he who provided the stable. We do not know. But what we do know is that at least to begin with, he turns them away. Again, I emphasize, he's not a Herod. He's not trying to kill the child. He does not hate the child. He doesn't feel anything towards the child. He's simply minding his own business, running his inn, making sure the customers and the punters are happy. And if anyone else comes a knocking, you know, no offense, but we can't accommodate you. Thank you. If only he knew who it was who came knocking. If only he knew that in thousands of churches for thousands of years, people would be telling his part, the man who turned them away. Again, not because he was a bad man. He was simply a busy man. Not because he hated the child, but because it made no difference to him. In one respect, I can't really include him tonight because he hasn't reacted at all. But that's the problem. He hasn't reacted at all. In one respect, I prefer Herod to the innkeeper. Ooh, how can I justify that? Okay, I don't. I prefer the innkeeper. I don't like Herod. But by reacting the way Herod does, Herod shows an understanding of who that child was. It was a misunderstanding, and it was the wrong reaction. But at least he thought about it. The innkeeper, I don't think, gave it a second thought. I think it was Napoleon who said, "Britain is a nation of shopkeepers." Some of you can see where I'm going with this. We're not a nation of shopkeepers. We're a nation of innkeepers. Because the child comes a-knocking, and we just don't care. Oh, sure, we light the candles, and we put up the tree, and we get the tinsel out, and we have the roast, all lovely stuff. But that's what the innkeeper was doing that night. He was making sure his punters had a good dinner and a good time in his inn. But the child who came, for him, there was neither room nor time. Now I put it to you now, and I am going to close. In Revelation chapter 3, that's the last book of the Bible, Jesus said, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and sup with him, and he with me." Might it be this evening? You hear him knocking on the door of your heart. Don't be like the innkeeper. It's not that you're bad, you're simply busy. It's not that you hate him, it's just you haven't the time. Oh, you've got respect for Christmas, that's great. But for Jesus himself, you've never made the room. You've never given him the time. You've never opened the door. It's going to be lonely this Christmas. We often hear it piped in every supermarket. It's going to be lonely every Christmas you spend without Christ. "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. Whoever hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and sup with him, and he with me."